All right, and welcome to the first official off-season Fastest 40 Minutes of Podcasting. It is Bill and Ross here today. I am Bill. Say hi, Ross.
Good evening.
We are, right now we've got subject matter. Once we get to the summer, we might be struggling for ideas. But right now, we're going to go with a little football talk. We're going to go with a little all-sports report and give you an update of the bracket that is sweeping, sweeping Rock'em Nation anyway.
There's getting some sports blog nation love. Let's not sell it short.
That is true, and I can't ignore the Unholy Alliance doing well, contributing here.
Unholy Alliance has its own battle to fight coming up here pretty soon.
That's true. I bet it wins it too.
I bet it does.
All right. So first things first, just real quick, one last little round of applause for the very, very surprisingly and wonderfully entertaining Missouri basketball season. There's really nothing to say that hasn't been said before, but seeing basketball back in Columbia and so quickly was very reaffirming in a lot of ways. Do you have anything to add?
No, and it's hard for me to say. I don't have ties to Columbia that go that far back. I can obviously describe Columbia without basketball, considering what you only have to go back 12 months to figure that. You don't even have to go back that far. We were joking about it during football season.
Yep.
But it's a different atmosphere. It really is. And it's one of those things I feel awful for our readers that have been drawn away from this community and this campus and didn't get to see the transformation as it went on.
Yeah, it was fast. I mean, there's success. You sell out a couple games there. It was a lot of fun, and then you beat Texas, you beat Kansas, you beat Oklahoma, you win the Big 12 tournament. It was just a massive avalanche of success there, and it couldn't have happened to a better group of players and coaches, and we kept our coach, so all is good. Now all we have to do is land Jared Famous, and we're in business for next year.
And there's some teams that look on camera and just seem like they're the most likable group of guys on the court, and then you get off the court, and it's a different story. That was not the case with this Missouri team. I can tell you this personally, having worked with them all year long. It is one of the most likable groups of people I have ever been around in my time covering athletics.
Yeah, you could tell. I mean, the press conferences were great. I do wish I had been at the press conference with the guy from China, where the dude asked Matt Lawrence if he had a future in the NBA. I do wish I could have seen that just for Matt's very diplomatic "I don't think so" response.
But and then you get Damari saying, "I don't speak no Chinese, but I am an active listener."
Yeah, that's right. That was
so I think perhaps the best quote of the year was Leo after the Baylor game when he came back to the starting lineup, and all those teammates are saying, Leo's Leo. So Mike D'Armond asked Leo what exactly that means, and Leo just looks confused, looks down, is like, "I don't know. I am Leo."
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think in a nutshell, the fact that we are all going to miss Leo tremendously says really all you need to know about the way the season unfolded. Because, I mean, he had a love-hate relationship with the fans over the years. Even this year, when he got suspended one last time before turning into good Leo for the rest of the year. It was a very unique team, very likable team. Next year, our strengths will be stronger. Our weaknesses will be weaker. And we'll see what happens. But, I mean, it's great seeing these freshmen kind of all developing their own identity so early and knowing that we're going to have them another 3 years.
And it was just the best resurrection this side of the gospel of Mark.
Or the 2007 Missouri football team, one or the other.
Touche, but that one was building up.
We at least saw
it. You saw that coming. If you saw this year coming, I'm sorry, I don't believe you.
Yeah. All right, well... So, I mean, that was wonderful. It's funny just seeing everybody kind of trudge along into spring football, especially, I mean, last year, I think we were talking mostly about spring football by the last weekend in February. And now we were very hesitant to, I guess we have to stop talking about basketball. Well, the practice reports are coming in pretty good now. We've got, the usual suspects, Gabe and Dave Matter and Mike D'Armond and everybody giving reports. What are your general impressions? I guess everybody has their own impressions depending on what they were looking for in those practice reports. What were you looking for, and what are your impressions so far?
It seems like most people are focusing on the quarterback play, and rightfully so, but maybe it's just me. That conversation seems to have ended. It seems like any controversy there has taken care of itself. It's Gabbert's team.
Yeah,
there's still questions about what they're going to do with Dalton or Glazer, but is that really the biggest concern at the moment? It's not for me. Obviously, Devin Moore stepping up and continuing to show that it's not just Derek Washington's team is exhilarating, especially if you saw him in the Colorado game last year when he covered about 55 yards in maybe 3.5 seconds.
Yeah.
I've said it before, perhaps most concerning for me on the offense, I am not sure that there is a number one receiver on this receiving corps. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. There is something to be said for the sheer quantity of weapons that Gabbert's going to have. He will have no tendencies the way things are going now because, I mean, one game, I guess you could, if you're painting it in a positive light, you would think back to the Missouri basketball team in that, you know, Marcus Denman would score 17 one night and then two the next. Kim English would score 14 one night. The way this is shaping up, there isn't going to be a number one receiver, but at any given moment, oh, do you hear the cat?
That is your Capital Brewery 7 seed, folks.
I swear this wasn't intentional. I wasn't trying to set this up just to win some more voters. Anyway, it's setting up to where, you know, Wes Kemp might have 7 catches for 105 yards one game and 1 catch for 4 the next, and Jarrell Jackson the same. And, everybody else down the line, Denaria Alexander, if he is truly, truly healthy and lives up to the potential that everybody thought he had before all the injuries, then he is a number one receiver. He's going to have to prove that. He still seems like he runs like a colt. He runs very quickly in a straight line, but he's just not. Anyway, he could be a good receiver. Jared Perry, very good number three receiver. Woodland and all the other receivers, and then the two tight ends who are clearly going to lead the team in receptions. Even though they might average about 7 yards a catch, and 2 good receiving running backs, he's got great weapons. It's just, you know, we were in 2006, we were an 8-5 team with a bunch of pretty good receivers, and Will Franklin was very good at times, and then he disappeared at times. But in 2007 and 2008, we had a number one receiver, and we won 22 games. And clearly, there was more to it than just that. But I mean, I do think that's the difference: is good receiver, true great number one receivers can score on any play. And this one, I think, will be our offense this year will be dictated by the play calling. If we make good play calls, make good throws, we'll get yards, we'll score points, but we won't break a little inside screen for 85 yards or anything.
Yeah, I think you touched on it earlier in the week, if I recall. It's not going to be as explosive as we are used to. That doesn't mean it's not going to be, okay, it will mean that it's not as efficient, because I seriously doubt anybody believes that Blake Gabbert will come in and make this offense as efficient as it was for the last 3 years. That's physically impossible, I think. You're the numbers guy, not me.
Well, but I mean,
I understand what you're saying about Denario Alexander. He is far more athletic than he is polished, which is why you get so excited about his upside. You get so excited about his potential, and you realize what he is capable of. But at the same time, and this is a horrible time for him to be missing spring ball, because this is a time where they really need him to be a polished, smart, effective number one receiver and not just another athletic playmaker that can be thrown into the fold.
Well, and I mean, if things shake out a certain way, I'm okay with him missing right now. I mean, it does give more people time with the first string, and that's fine. And if he comes back truly 100% healthy, because, I mean, I think everybody seems to agree that it seemed like he was rushed back this last year. He just, like, you know, he'd take 3 or 4 smooth steps, and then he just kind of, you know, one of them would just be kind of rigid. He just did not look like he was running running very comfortably when, you know, the ball bounced off his helmet against Oklahoma State, and because he just wasn't with it. So, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the trade-off. If he has to take another some more time off, but he comes back truly 100% healthy, then, I mean, at the very least, we have a very, very good number two receiver, which is something. But, I've been hoping to read those reports that we've been reading about Gabbert, only reading about, you know, Jarrell Jackson or somebody where they just, you know, we have to keep giving them the ball because they've just demanded it. They've been so dominant. Technically, a really good defense can shut you down when you don't have a go-to weapon. And it doesn't seem like we do this year, unless it's in the running game, because by all means, we've got two good running backs, a nice little, not quite thunder lightning or anything like that, because both of them can run inside and out, but a nice little, a diverse look there, and a what I'm getting more and more excited about, one of the best offensive lines we've seen in a while in Columbia, I think. Now, I could be proven wrong, but that's what I'm thinking so far.
And it's just weird to think, because it seems like we have two extremely capable, almost number one halfbacks, but then at the same time, you've got, you know, in Alexander, Perry, and Jackson, no number one receiver, and perhaps maybe three guys that could be a fantastic number two receiver.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, good play calling, good development over the summer. I mean, Gabbert and, you know, Gabbert's already thrown 1,000 balls to Jackson and Kemp, you know, and the summer hasn't even started yet. So, I mean, there's plenty of time to build a rapport there, but, you know, Blaine Gabbert's going to have everything you need in being a first-time starter with lots of expectations on him as far as having a good line to protect him. Not, I mean, you know, not an OU or Texas line, but the best in the North. And having two good running backs who can either take the attention off of him by running the ball well or can flare out of the backfield and be very good receiving threats. He's got the two big tight ends he can throw to on 3rd and 6. But it's just, you know, really good defenses can stop those kinds of offense unless you have individual playmakers. And maybe, maybe we will end up seeing that. It's just I don't think we've read anything yet that suggests that's what we have in this receiver core. It sounds like a possession core instead of a explosive touchdown at any moment core, which is better than nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly beats that guy to be in the A&M offense right now.
So onto the defense, I think it's kind of funny. You know, I know you and I have both posted on Rock M about this, and it's funny to me how excited we are about a defense that loses a bunch of starters and has to replace its defensive coordinator and has at least a question mark of defensive tackle. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a weakness yet because, I mean, Rizzono could be really good his sophomore year or whoever else. But it's kind of funny that I'm trying to avoid just being talking myself into being excited because it's spring football. But there are a lot of things to like about the individual talent of this defense. Who excites you?
Do we have that kind of time? I assume we do, but like you said, it's almost scary how excited we find ourselves getting over this defense. And that could very well be a statement on how the defense ended the year last year, just that it almost needed some new blood. If we'd seen the same characters over and over, we might have the same questions. I think at this point, it's become a question of we realize how much talent there is. Are they going to be able to mesh together into a unit? Whereas in the past, you kind of understood what you were getting. Even when you were going from 07 to 08, you thought you knew exactly what you were getting out of this defense, and nothing really came by surprise until, you know, a couple of miscommunications, maybe Eberflus not putting them in the position where they needed to be. Outside of that, you understood the talent. You understood both the strengths, the weaknesses, the limitations. There was almost no element of surprise as far as the talent went with that defense. That is completely gone this year. Absolutely, completely gone. Across the board, you and I have gone on and on about the defensive end situation and just how much depth and potential that unit has. Again, you and I are in the driver and passenger seat, respectively, of the Kenjin Jackson train at safety. We are co-presidents of the Carl Geddes fan club, despite of the absolute pantsing he got in San Antonio.
I blame Justin Garrett for that.
No, I blame Justin Garrett for everything. We don't even have to go there. Yeah. And then I've touched on all this. You've touched on the question of defensive tackle, and completely being overlooked is just how strong this linebacking core is going to be. Oh, by the way, you're going to have all Big 12 Sean Weatherspoon right there, alongside Luke Lambert, who's seen a lot of time, alongside Andrew Gatchker, whose motor never seems to stop, alongside Will Ebner, who I believe can cause a Category 5 hurricane.
That was a nice little pep talk there. I'm impressed. Yeah, no, I think this is a perfect time to introduce Dave Steckel as defensive coordinator because it seems like he has a very Steckel team. You think about the parts of his personality that are different from maybe Eberflus. I don't know if he's a better defensive coordinator than Eberflus. He might not, but it does seem like this is the perfect time to introduce his personality and his seeming aggression into the mindset of this defense. When you've got a senior leader in Sean Weatherspoon you know, at least a couple other guys who are, you know, potentially a little dumb in the way they run really fast, but they run really fast, in Will Ebner and Andrew Gatchkar. They could do really, really good things with just by Steckel saying, you know, run to the ball at all times, just run to the ball. There are two question marks. We've mentioned it a couple times now. D-tackle, I think Jerron Baston really, really is good. I think Ziggy Hood very much deservedly gets a lot of the credit for the fact that we actually had a very good run defense last year. But, I mean, Baston is a very good space eater. He's pretty quick for his size. I really like him at D-tackle. It's just, it sounds like it's Terrell Rosono's job to lose alongside Baston. I think this competition that seems to be going on with Rosono and Dominique Hamilton and a not 250-pound George White and maybe hopefully Jimmy Burge here continues to improve. Andy Maples I don't really expect anything out of, but there's a competition there. Hopefully Rosono or somebody seizes the job and really kind of makes it his own, because, I mean, I think that's the weak point. I agree when it comes to the defensive ends about the potential in Jacquees and Alden Smith and, you know, Brian Godcoulter. As I said in a write-up, I don't know, today or yesterday or something, the thought of having both Smith brothers there, not really brothers, but having the Smiths both at the 250 to 260-pound range instead of, you know, 235, 240, I think that's going to be a huge difference. Because it gives them a little more every down capability. It means we can put Brian Coulter in a better position to succeed as far as, being the speed rush guy. And we think we know that 3/4 of our defensive line is going to be pretty good. It's just a question of that fourth guy, the second defensive tackle. And the other question mark is the secondary. Until we actually see it succeed, you know, we can pin all the blame on Justin Garrett and maybe a little on Castine Bridges just because they've walked out the door and because we've complained about Justin Garrett for a couple of years. But until we see Carl Geddes live up to the potential that we've heaped upon him, and Kenji Jackson, he was an inch away from making a ton of big plays last year, and hopefully he can make up ground on that. Hopefully it's not just that he's an inch too short. It sounds like good things are happening for the competition for the other cornerback slot between Trey Hobson and Kevin Rutland and maybe Munir Prince. That sounds good. My biggest question mark is simply the other safety spot where Hardy Ricks is in first string right now.
And we've seen what happens whenever you have one I don't want to say strong safety, whenever you have one solid safety and there's a question mark at the other. We really don't need to delve into that. We saw that for the last 8 to 10 games.
Well, and Hardy Ricks has been a tease over the last few years because, I mean, his coverage skills are really, I think I know what his coverage skills, what he has to offer in that regard. It's a reason he's not a cornerback anymore. But the dude can hit. And, of course, I mean, so could Justin Garrett. I realize that. But, I mean, it seems like he has a little bit more potential than, you know, Dell Howard or some of the other guys, which are clearly is why he's first string right now, but you do kind of secretly hope that Xavier Gooden maybe overtakes him at some point just for, you know, in all these little summaries I've been writing, it's just hard not to get excited about 2010 and 2011. And I would love to see if Xavier Gooden or Jarrell Harrison even is good enough to overtake Ricks here soon, then as good as our secondary, or as good as our defense might be this year, and, you know, there'll be growing pains, it will be good in 2010. So that's what I'm hoping to see out of that.
And one thing I think you and I need to, you know, perhaps table for another podcast, because you and I, I'm sure you and I could go on for this for about 20 or 30 minutes, is last season, I know I did especially, and I'm sure you and the Beef and a lot of other people did, it didn't seem like a lot of our defensive playmakers were put in good positions to make plays on the football. We can get into the William Moore debate for hours upon end.
Yeah.
I think something we need to look at is Carl Geddes best suited to that nickel role. If he is, then you're taking either Lambert or Gatchkar off the field. Is that a good idea? And I think it's just, I'm interested to see, obviously we know what Steckel brings to the sideline in terms of the fire and the passion, and there's a reason Sean Weatherspoon is texting him and pushing him to stay on the sidelines and not go up to the press box. But I'm interested as a football fan to see where the X's and O's go with this defense next year.
Yeah, I think Andrew Gatchkar really could be the key. I think whoever it was, Gabe or Dave Matter or something like that. It is funny because I just kind of internalize everything they say and then make it my own. Thanks, guys. But I do think Gatchkar could be the key because we played a lot of nickel back or a lot of nickel last year with Moore as the nickel back, usually blitzing unsuccessfully. And if Gatchkar can be good enough to keep him on the field in, you know, in less extreme passing situations, if he can cover a slot guy, if he can cover a tight end, that could open things up because he's really fast. I mean, when he committed, he was one of the first commits of his class, and we all read about, you know, he went to some rivals camp and he had like the fastest shuttle time in the country at one point. And I mean, the guy has speed. If he can learn the position and if he can cover somebody, then we really do. That does open up our options because Carl Geddes does stay at cornerback and, you know, Jackson stays on the field. We don't have two, you know, possibly two weaknesses in the secondary because, you know, we only have four guys in the secondary. So I think that's key. They have to trust that other linebacker who I guess was Lambert last year and they didn't really trust him to cover the slot or do the variety of things that William Moore could do. If Gack, as I was calling him earlier today, and I don't, or as I, no, sorry. You didn't hear that. You're going to read that tomorrow. I've already hit publish on that one. Never mind. anyway, if Gatchkar is capable of really, really playing his position well, and I mean, he's a junior, he should come along now. If he's capable, I think that opens up this defense a lot. And of course, the other option is, the other thing that could open this thing up a lot is if Sheldon Richardson A, is eligible and playing in the fall, and B, plays like he's the whatever he ended up, the number three player in the country, or whatever he was. That's kind of hovering around everything, but it's been nice to see that the defensive ends so far don't need him. They're pretty good without him. So
Lord knows the defensive, it would be wonderful to have that kind of depth at defensive tackle, though.
Yeah, as soon as somebody convinces him that he should be playing defensive tackle, that's kind of the key. All right, well, yeah, clearly, not, it is funny. We were hesitant to talk about football. I'm pretty sure we could make a 3-hour podcast just about Missouri football. We shouldn't, though.
You do not have to pry me to start talking Missouri football. As soon as the game was over in Glendale with UConn, I was ready to go.
Oh, I was holding on to it a little bit longer, but yeah, now it's in my wheelhouse. I'm back. I'm back, baby. Well, we are at the 23-minute mark, so we should probably switch gears to what we were going to talk about. We'll go through this real quickly. Basically, what we want to do is take a look at the Big 12 North units, as in, you know, running back unit, wide receiver unit, et cetera, and just really quickly give our opinions on kind of the best and the worst of the North, just the North, because I think that's going to be key this year as far as the mindset of Missouri fans is this team's not going to go 11-1. This team doesn't have a chance to make any national noise like that. But if Kansas struggles with their schedule, if Nebraska struggles breaking in new pieces on offense, and you know 5-3 becomes available to win the North, Missouri could win the North next year. And so we really need to be focusing mostly, I think, on the 5 North games. And so real quickly here, we'll compare ourselves as we, you know, the way we perceive this Missouri team against the rest of their division, now that we've lost a lot of key components from the last couple of years. All right, so first things first, this one's a pretty obvious answer, unfortunately, but who has the best quarterback unit in the Big 12 next year, or Big 12 North?
Not even unfortunate. I'll flat out say it. Todd Reesing is the best quarterback in the Big 12 North, and I'm not, if you give me the option of every other quarterback in the Big 12, as far as being a gamer is concerned, I think I take Todd Reesing out. I mean, don't take anything away from Cole. I'm going to get chewed out by Oklahoma and Texas fans for saying that.
No, they're not listening.
Obviously, one guy's a Heisman Trophy winner, and the other guy, you know, was 5 seconds away from perhaps an undefeated season. But in terms of the pure fire and being heady, and it drives me nuts because the attitude is what makes you hate him, but at the same time, it's what makes you respect him. You can't argue against Reesing.
I would say, I mean, we saw kind of the good and bad sides of Todd Reesing the last two games in Arrowhead the last 2 years. If he's getting some protection and if he's allowed to improvise, like just turning the gunslinger mode, you know, Missouri saw it, Oklahoma saw it earlier in the year. You know, when things start breaking down, he turns into the best quarterback in the Big 12. I think the key for him is being able to kind of get out of the pocket sometime and improvise. If you make him throw to the routes that are being run initially, you can cover them. You can kind of shut Kansas down a little bit, as Missouri did for most of the first half of that game. He was throwing the 2-yard sideline pass the entire first half. But the Missouri offense couldn't do anything, and the defense eventually wore out. But yeah, clearly, Kansas, when you walk through everybody else, Missouri, we're all about our 5-star quarterback. It's great having a highly touted guy just to brag about him a little bit. But, we know nothing about him. We know nothing about Nebraska. I heard they just converted a defensive back or something to quarterback, hoping he could do something. We know nothing. Well, we kind of know something about Carson Kaufman at K-State. He's not better than Todd Reesing. He could be pretty solid.
He is there in the last 2 minutes of a game. That is true.
Against the other team's third string. That's right. And Iowa State, Austin Arnaud, solid. Not Todd Reesing. And Colorado, no. So, yes, almost by default, but also because he's a very good quarterback. Clearly, it's Todd Reesing. Running back unit.
Well, you can't make any kind of case for Kansas at the moment, because who knows what's going to happen with one of their three guys in their stable of backs, given the way things have gone down this week legally for that program and the Jacques Crawford ordeal, I should say. That's not to take anything. Jake Sharp is back, I believe, is he not?
Yeah, and he's fine. I've never been impressed with Sharp. He's as good as the blocking ahead of him.
I do not think that unit is above the top. However, I do think the tandem of Quigley and Sharp together is certainly more than serviceable. I really don't know what to make of Iowa State. What, it's another year of Alexander Robinson, maybe?
Well, I mean, if he, he's shown flashes, but he hasn't even really been able to seize the number one job all year yet. So he really needs to, this is his junior year, so he needs to bring it, but no, they're not. Iowa State doesn't have the horses.
Yeah, and then at K-State, you've got, what, Keith and Valentine again, and then what's a Logan Dold fighting out for carries?
Oh, what's a Logan Dold? Oh, I missed that.
I just pulled out an old Beyond the Box Score reference that happened. You can make a case for Nebraska a little bit between Helu and Castile. I assume both of them are back. I'm not looking at it that closely.
Yeah, they are.
I assume they're only losing Lucky. Again, a very serviceable tandem. I think you can put that right up there with Kansas. Do we need to get into Missouri? I think Derek Washington is far and away the best back in the Big 12 North. However, I do want to go on record and say the wild card here, and you mentioned it earlier, is Darrell Scott.
Yeah. You could. And what's the other guy's name? I should have done a little more research here. The other freshman from Colorado last year, the short guy, Rodney Stewart.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Scott and Stewart are good. Helu and Castile really improved as the year went on last year, and I mean, they're in the top three. But I'm being the homer on this one. Missouri's got the best running backs in the Big 12 North. Scott is clearly a wild card, but I also think the running game will be a little better by the offensive lines in front of them, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Missouri has the best one of those too. So that's Missouri's my vote.
I'm staying with Missouri as well.
Okay. Wide receiver.
Wide receiver, again, know nothing about Iowa State, and I'm not sure I need to. Nebraska, they're losing Peterson and Swift, if I recall. That is not anything I'm concerned about with what's left there. I think the two I have the most questions about are, first of all, Kansas State. Mark Brown is back. If I recall, Brandon Banks is back.
Yep.
Deion Murphy's gone. I think Aubrey Quarles will be a senior. That if Kaufman can get the ball to him, and if I have no idea what Snyder's going to do. I've gotten so used to Ron Prince just coaching playmakers out of games unless they're playing Baylor or something like that. So I think that unit is solid. I don't know that it's great. I can make the exact same case for Colorado. Colorado is that team every single year. You look at them and you're like, they should be better than they are performing. It seems like they have a lot of serviceable players, but just never put it together at the same time.
Well, I think also with Colorado, I mean, they've been everybody's sleeper for the last 4 years. I think Tim Griffin has already said he's their his sleeper for 2009 as well. But I mean, you know, you could just keep picking them until you're right, but they're going to have to prove something to me. I think they've got Josh Smith, who's solid, and I just don't really think, you know, maybe they have some incoming guys, but I don't think anything of Colorado. Iowa State, I mean, they have a couple, you know, starter-level guys, but not as far as best in the North. K-State is interesting because if they have a good running game, suddenly their wide receivers are averaging 22 yards a catch under Bill Snyder. But we just, I'm not sure they're going to have a running game. I think they're going to be facing a lot of third and eights. And, I mean, Banks isn't a third and eight guy. We're beating around the bush here. Missouri, I think we've already established, has an okay, probably, I would say, better than Colorado's. As far as usage, they'll be as good as K-State's. Better than Nebraska's and Iowa State's. But, I mean, clearly, assuming Des Briscoe is suspended only for the spring and not the fall, having Briscoe and Meyer, and really it doesn't matter who else, but having Briscoe and Meyer as two guys who have been playing with Todd Reesing for going on their third year now, and basically, you know, you read stories about how, you know, they have their patterns they run, and if the play breaks down, they immediately shift into a different pattern entirely, and they're all on the same page. Clearly, I'm not sure who number two is. But yeah, to me, clearly Kansas is number one.
No, that I'm intrigued to see if Raymond Pendleton, in his final year of eligibility, is able to turn himself into a complete receiver outside of just the athletic mold.
Yeah, I'm not really getting my hopes up about that one. But they don't really need. I mean, their third guy can be just about anybody as long as Briscoe and Meyer are playing well. I'd say we can get into tight ends, but you know, Kansas doesn't really have one they throw to. Iowa State in Colorado, like Re-Arc Gear or whatever, Colorado's fine. I mean, K-State, I couldn't name you anything. Pretty much it comes down to Mike McNeil in Nebraska and then the combo of Michael Agnew and Andrew Jones at Missouri. I don't know what you think, but I'm gonna have to really quickly go with Missouri on that one.
Yeah, I'm taking Ego and Jones.
Yeah, Ego, yes. okay, offensive line.
You might have to start this one out here. I'm obviously very impressed with the Missouri offensive line. It's one of those things, I go back and I look at your unit previews for spring ball, and just the way Elvis Fisher played last year, you almost sit there like, wait a minute, he's only a sophomore?
Yeah, I think I said it in the preview that I do think Missouri has the best offensive line in the North. And, I mean, it's funny because, you know, we do lose Curtis Gregory, but the thought of Elvis Fisher, Austin Webbles, and Dan Hoke being starters for the next 3 years on 3/5 of the Missouri offensive line. And then you've got, you know, your Jason Palmgren and Tim Barnes. And then coming up, you've got Chris Freeman and Jack Miners and all those guys. I mean, this line could be really good for a long time. I'm really excited about the way it's come together. And I mean, nothing makes an offense look better more unexpectedly than a good line, and nothing makes an offense look worse than a bad line. I mean, you want to blame Tommy Bowden for Clemson's downfall last year. Well, they lost four starters on their offensive line and couldn't clear holes for their two good running backs. That's going to kill you. And so, yeah, the offensive line is kind of the unsung piece of a lot of successes and failures. I'm not going to try to pretend to tell you who else might have a good line in the North. Kansas will be all right. Nebraska's will be all right. I'm not sure Colorado's or K-State's will even be all right. But, yeah, I think it's Missouri. And it's funny, we just mentioned a bunch of units, and it was all Kansas and Missouri. So let's move to D-line. What you got on the D-line?
If we could split it up, defensive ends and defensive tackles, yeah. I can guarantee you I'm not even thinking twice when I take Missouri at defensive end, just for the sheer amount of athleticism and potential they have there. And then at defensive tackle, I think Ndamukong Suh alone tilts that in favor of Nebraska. But which one outweighs the other, I really don't know.
I'm ready to see Suh do something against a good offensive line. Because you think about the big games he had. He hasn't done anything against Missouri in 2 years. He hasn't. He lit up Clemson in the bowl game. But as I was saying, Clemson's line really wasn't very good. I think Nebraska clearly has the best defensive line returning because you also got, along with Suh, you've got the latest Steinkuhler, whichever one he is, Baker, I think, replacing his older brother, Ty. I think those will be two really good D-tackles. Pierre Allen at D-end. I really couldn't name you anybody else, but that's I think that's going to be 3/4 of a really good line there. I want to think the Missouri can match that, but I mean, I think this is going to be, if Sue's ever going to put it together against good offenses, it's going to be his senior year. So I'm going to go out on, well, not going to go out on a limb. I'm going to take the safe pick and say Nebraska on this one.
I won't make an argument for or against Nebraska in the same way I can't make it for or against Missouri until some of the question marks are answered. Although I do want to say we have to send a Rockin' Nation salute to the now departed George the Rabid Goldfish Hippolyte at Colorado.
Yeah, he's finally, after 17 years, he's finally moving on. I mean, real quickly with the other ones, you know, Kansas had the freshman last year from Jeff City. Johnson?
Sounds right.
Sure. We're so well researched. Yeah. They had the freshman Richard Johnson. Okay. He was
sounded
solid.
Too easy.
He was solid. I can't name you anybody Colorado had other than Hippolyte. And clearly I wrote about all these teams, but again, it's been a while. I'm switching from basketball mode here. Off the top of my head, though, I just really don't know if anybody else has anything. Brandon Harrell at K-State was solid, but he also you don't get quite as much press for this, but I mean, he jumped offside and had more, it seemed like he had more unnecessary roughness penalties than anybody. So I'm not even really sure his stats balanced out his penalties. But otherwise, I just don't really know. I think it does come down to probably Nebraska, I guess probably Missouri, and then maybe we'll say Iowa State third. Why not?
Yeah, they need some love.
Yeah, exactly. Linebackers.
I've talked about how excited I am about Missouri. I literally think I may have spit on the screen in my excitement going over Ebner and Gatchker. And not only that, is everyone else in the conference reloading at linebacker?
Yes, completely. I mean, you look through, you look through teams leading tacklers. I mean, Iowa State didn't really have anybody truly worth mentioning at linebacker. Jesse Smith, you know, was fine. But then, I mean, Kansas loses all of theirs. You know, Colorado, Jeff Smart's pretty good. I'll give a shout out to Jeff Smart there. I mean, K-State had, you know, nothing, I don't think. Really, I mean, their whole defense was really, really bad last year. Nebraska had a kind of a patchwork linebacker core last year, you know, had the converted running back Cody Glenn, and of course Will Compton. We all know Will Compton. He could
make a Will Compton joke.
Well, he could, in theory, really turn it on this year and be good, but I think, I mean, Missouri has two proven commodities in Weatherspoon's 1.5 and Luke Lambert's 1/2, I guess. But I mean, those are two returning starters and a lot of potential in the other starting position. I mean, I feel every time we pick Missouri, I feel like we're being homers. But I mean, show me a better linebacking core in the Big 12 North. Just by default, it seems like Missouri gets it.
That's a spot where I really have no qualms whatsoever taking Missouri. I do not feel bad about that. Outside of maybe, what, Philip Dillard at Nebraska? No one that I would compare to Sean Weatherspoon in the linebacking cores of the Big 12 North right now. And then just based on depth, given what I know, I have no reason not to pick against Missouri.
Yeah, I do guess Dillard and Compton and maybe Blake Lawrence could be a pretty good core at Nebraska. But yeah, I'm going to stick with Missouri for this one. Now, if we pick Missouri for the next one, we're being homers. What you got in defensive back?
I've got a whole lot of nothing other than, you know, I look at Colorado and I see a couple of names I know, but this is a Colorado defense that surrendered, what, 58 to us? Not that there's a lot of shame in giving up 58 points to Missouri after we've been beaten two straight weeks.
Yeah, I think their offense handed us a bunch of those points, so I'm willing to overlook that.
Yeah. Iowa State, I have absolutely nothing to say once again.
The cornerback, they had the freshman cornerback.
Austin or not, I really have nothing to say about Iowa State.
They had a good cornerback. Leonard Johnson. Ha-ha! I named an Iowa State guy. Yeah, Leonard Johnson was good at Iowa State. Colorado, I think they had pretty good safeties. Chappelle Brown at corner is pretty good, I think. K-State, nothing. I mean, well, maybe with good defensive coaching, it'll turn out they have something there, but last year they sure didn't. I'm going to say right now Kansas.
Because I think I'm going to have to agree with you just because of the safety tandem of senior Stuckey and Thornton in the back. That is, as far as the North is concerned at least, that's a pretty stout combo to have as your two safeties.
Yeah, I really didn't know that Stuckey, I mean, even though I was running the stats, I wasn't necessarily paying attention to the individual stats, and I didn't realize the season Stuckey was having heading into the Missouri game. And then he personally, in the first half, defeated Missouri with not a lot of help from his offense. And, you know, he got in Chase Daniel's head. And even though that seemed a little easier to do in his senior year, that's still pretty hard to do. And so,
unless you're Pat Fitzgerald.
Right. And so, of course, that was, you know, I will also just continue to believe that starting in the Oklahoma State game, Chase Daniel hurt his thumb and just didn't say anything. But that's a completely other story. Yeah, Stuckey and Thornton, decent cornerbacks. I think that's probably the most complete unit. And we can talk up Carl Geddes. Asante and Tenars at Nebraska are pretty good. But, I mean, overall, it seems – well, first of all, it seems very safety-laden compared to the cornerbacks. But either way, I think, yeah, we have to give it to Kansas. So,
well, if you're a cornerback in the Big 12, odds are you're not going to be getting much love.
And now as we hit the 40-minute mark here, I guess we should very quickly hit special teams. It's April, so if you can't name anybody on anybody's special teams, that's fine, because I don't know if I can either.
I don't know if I really care that much to look it up. I'll be dead honest with you. We can touch on Missouri if you want, though. Tanner Mills has just got a hammer for a leg. It's just, you know, Adam Crossett had a hammer of a leg, too, right. And he managed to hit field goals from outside of 40 yards with absolute painstaking, beautiful kicks.
And then a 20-yarder.
Move him inside the 5-yard line for an extra point, and it's 50-50 at best.
Well, it sounds like Grant Russell actually has been doing pretty good things. You know, he had one punt last year in garbage time, and it was gorgeous as a redshirt freshman behind Jake Harry. I'm kind of optimistic about him. I want to see him in person. That's one area where you really can tell something in the black and gold game is watching the kickers, just not necessarily whether they're making them or not, but how does the ball bounce off their leg? How does the kick actually look? And I say that realizing that we all thought Jake Harry sucked after the black and gold game last year, and it turned out he was a pretty good punter. But kicking especially, I think that's going to be kind of interesting, because you've got Russell, you've got, what's the other walk-on, Trey Barrow, you've got Tanner Mills, who it definitely seems like he's going to kick off, but if he can't make a kick accurately, then he can't place kick. And of course, at the other positions, Jake Harry's the punter, and then the return game is a big mess right now. I think John McGaffey might be our punt returner. We'll have to see. I mean, clearly from Jeff Wolford and Jeremy Macklin, it's going to be a step down. We just have to accept it.
And then one thing I've got to add on the punting, just because this is driving me insane. I don't know if you've been following the rest of the Big 12, but Mack Brown is being chanted and worshipped like a god, because apparently he came up with the greatest idea ever to have his punters do a rugby punt either to the right or to the left. Maybe it's just me, but starting in the, Oklahoma State game last year, when we had Harry to go one way and Wolford to go the other, seems like that idea is kind of familiar. But hey, if you're from Texas and you can, you've got that kind of budget, you got that kind of notoriety, and you want to say you came up with the idea, more power to you.
Yeah, by God, we had the first lefty-righty punting platoon. Don't take that away from us.
It's the one thing we did right last year, right?
Yeah, other than win 10 games, hello.
Yeah, that happened?
Yeah, really, I know. It seemed like it was like 7-7. all right, I planned on an all-sports report. It's at the 44-minute mark, amazingly. We thought we wouldn't have anything to talk about, but again, I have to remember this for the future. If football gets brought up, it's a 45-minute podcast. real quick on the all-sports, just two mains. Well, gymnastics did well, almost made nationals, finished third. That's a very good program we're building, and that goes with pretty much all Missouri programs at the moment. Baseball, the Rachel Phelps watch is at 19. It looks like we need to go about 19-9 the rest of the way to have a chance at making our nth straight tournament, whatever it's at now. We have a very good streak going. We sucked that first couple weeks of the season, and we're paying for it ever since. And if Steve Gray and Trevor Coleman can bottle up whatever they found on Wednesday when they both broke out against Minnesota, if they can take that to Baylor and everywhere else on the schedule, we might have a chance, but we'll see. Softball, have to give a shout-out to the fact that they're in the freaking top 10 right now. They are very highly ranked in both offense and defense, or pitching and offense, I should say. and it's really starting to look like they're a pretty scary team. They've run ruled their last three games. They've won by run rule against ranked opponents.
And you have to love headlines that say Missouri Grand Slam or something like Missouri walk-off homer gives them 9-1 win.
Yeah, I know. That was the headline, like the Missouri or something. That was good stuff. Yeah, no, softball's doing well. And real quick, whether you pronounce it mem or meme or meme, meme madness is going on right now. And, well, Ross, this is your baby. Why don't you take it away here?
Just update on the Spotsylvania regional. Everyone's seen what happened. Asian kid just absolutely walks through. No contest there. I did not expect the helicopter to put up much of a fight. I don't consider this an upset at the 4-5 in the same way I don't think you can consider a 9 over an 8 an upset. Good/bad Leo picks up a 60-40 win over Cheat Code. Cheat Code, I didn't buy into that and didn't seem adopted that highly. I can certainly understand Good and Bad Leo picking up the win there.
Yep.
In the 3-6, this is a big upset in my books. The people have spoken, apparently, and the 6-seed Hustle and Flow upsets Hot Tub. I can't be bitter about this. Both of them are kind of my brain children, as I said in the comments. I expected Hot Tub to get more love on that. Did you not?
It was a little surprising, but I guess, I mean, in the end, it's not a Missouri thing. It's a Big 12 thing. It was the greatest reference, and for the next 3 years, we'll cram it down everybody's throats. But yeah, I guess it just came down to one's a Missouri thing and one's not.
And then, let's see, as of today, I assume that Zudave's sister continues to waltz all over the competition. I won't make any bad jokes here.
They're just so easy.
That's what she said. Regardless, all right, I will only touch on one more of the regionals. Looking ahead at what we have coming up, the Capital Regional starting tomorrow, including the 1-8 matchup, Mr. Coffee, who I expect to waltz against number 8, your boxing analogies during basketball season. It's a late charger. I'm not expecting much out of it. And then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we've got the 4-5 Golden Watermelon Balls of Fury versus number 5 Unholy Alliance. I fully expect, even without Bring On the Cats interaction, I expected Unholy Alliance. But, again, I've been proven wrong so far. The day after, we will have one of the more interesting matchups, if you ask me. Number 3, MC Boom of Doom's Pudding versus number 6, Mother Rucker. I think you've got a fantastic Missouri nickname at number 6 going against not only a Armin Meme that's very popular, but one that the owner is not a big fan of, and one that I know you and the Beef will be pushing for mercilessly.
Oh, big time.
And then that takes us to the 2-7 in the Capital Regional, which I am so sad about this matchup. Number 2, Disrespect, which I expect to win handily going away in a way UNC won the NCAA tournament versus number 7, The Boys Cat on Podcast, which I think is one of the most underrated entries in this bracket. And I almost wish it had gotten a shot at maybe Grey Goose, because I think it might have had a better chance there. Or I wish it's maybe worked up into a 6-seed. Because I really think that that's going to fall beyond the wayside despite a late charge.
And I think The Boys Cat just missed a golden opportunity there by not yelling on cue. I think that would have pushed it over the top.
Assuming people are still listening 47 minutes
in. I tried 49.
That was
close. Yeah, the Beef stopped listening 20 minutes ago, by the way. this is really just the funniest contest in the world when you think about after a year and a half, we have enough inside jokes to have this contest. So I'm very pleased. Inside jokes and nicknames. And
just
wait
until next year when the field expands to the full 64.
Oh, God, I don't even want to.
Absolutely kidding.
I'll drop that one if it doesn't catch on. I would also like to say that it's been confirmed in the last 2 days, I'm the single worst That's What She Said joke person in the world. I never see them coming. I never say them myself. And it's starting to really piss me off, but that's something else entirely.
It's just written into my generation.
Well, my wife is good at them. You know, Seth will rip one out on email every now and then, and I never see them coming and I get pissed because I suck at them. Anyway, that was just killing time to make sure that we could actually hit the 50-minute mark this time, which is really astounding. We need to we need to probably rein that in a little bit, but for the two people still listening, we're going to go out to, I just thought of this, there's no thematic song this week, nothing for, I guess we could have done like Boys of Summer or anything or something like that for the start of baseball season, but instead what we're going to do this week is take you out to what has been so far my favorite song of 2009 of anything I've come across on eMusic anywhere else. For Ross, I am Bill. This is Harlem Shakes with Sunlight. There you go.
I had a coat of many colors, sold it off online, and now I duck my older brothers.